Sci-Fi Melody, Symptom 148, The Phantom Creeps.
Welcome back, Psychies, to an official Raving Lunatic Media Productions picture.
On May, matinee May, Sickies. Welcome back. We made it through April, and we got everything on time. I am so proud of you, Scott. I'm so proud of us. We're back on schedule. So
was a pandemic.
All it took was a pandemic, and let us never have that problem happen again.
Please, no.
I want to say to alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
To a viral infection that kills people. The solution to our time lag. Yeah, nope, that wasn't worth it. But all this month, we're going to scale back in time and do matinees. Now, for those of you that are unfamiliar, first, I guess I could refer you back to our Goulardi Fest podcast, where we interviewed Don from Don's Breakfast Cereal, his YouTube channel, where we talked about matinees. But if you don't feel like going back that far, matinees, back in the 30s, 40s, and even into the 50s, what you had was, if you wanted to see, you would go to the movie theater, you would pay your dime or quarter or whatever ungodly cheap thing it was at the time, and you would get usually a newsreel, a cartoon, and then there would be some kind of serialized drama before the movie. And it would run about 15, 20 minutes, maybe 25. And you would get different ones, horror or sci-fi or action or crime drama or romance. And a lot of the sci-fi stuff that came out that was very pulpy in nature and superheroes were put to the screen here. Superman got a big debut here, Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers. A lot of those started in the serials. And you would go in and you would watch it, and it was episodic. This was like the first episodic TV before there was TV. And it would be every week on Saturdays, usually for however many. And then you would see a movie after that. So what we're going to be covering is some of the sci-fi matinees that were out there in the 30s and 40s. And what's really nice about these is the fact that they're all public domain, meaning you can see them on YouTube or some other platform and not have to worry about ripping them off if you're really worried about copyright violation. So everything we're going to be looking at is public domain. What's up, Scott?
It's a very interesting case of what's old is new again, because currently everything is serialized on TV. Everything is.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, for a long time, because of syndication, they wanted everything to be episodic, where you could drop in at any point and enjoy the show. And now we've come back to, in the last 20 years, one of the oldest forms of entertainment in motion picture and TV and film, basically, coming back into style. So does that mean that we are only a few years away from silent movies coming back? death of the talkie, this fad of the talkie is finally over?
Well, maybe for some film school student, I don't know, but I'm going to go ahead and say no.
I don't think we have, as a society, the patience for a silent film. I got to read.
No, good grief. I think we barely have the patience for black and white anymore.
Yeah. There's been 6 minutes without an explosion. I'm walking out.
Thanks, Michael Bay. But yeah, you're right. That's a good point, Scott. I wasn't even thinking that we are kind of coming back to that. However, there are still some episodic shows, mostly sitcoms, honestly. And to a degree, I kind of miss that, because it was nice to be able to just hop on in, to just drop on in and pick up from where there is, because everything that is going to happen is self-contained.
Yeah. And so there's something, I think it gives you a bigger range of storytelling, that what you can tell certain stories, and you've got the magic reset button. people talk about continuity. Continuity is great, but it's nice to be able to watch the stories in any order so that you can have, you're not contained to one arc. You've got a range of different things you can tell in episodic television. And yeah, you lose some character development and you lose some world building development. And you know, there's trade-offs to that, but there is something nice about episodic and not serialized television. I know I've been harping on that for about 2-3 years, missing episodic TV, but you know, wouldn't be sci-fi mount if we didn't pull out our old, you know, whip the horse until it's dead complaints.
Oh, we're just like a corporate entity. That's all they do. So, but honestly, back in the day, serialized was a great way to get people back to the theater, because there was only radio. And if I want to drag the kid or whomever back into the movie, this is a great way to do it.
Very true.
Because you're going to want to see the next part. Whereas today, especially with something like Netflix, well, if I miss an episode, if I only have time for one episode, who cares? I'll binge it later. It's not as much the pull as it used to be. The big thing that keeps people now from avoiding episodes is spoilers. That's it. If it weren't for spoilers, people wouldn't binge. Or there'd be less binging in my mind, because there wouldn't be such pressure.
I have not finished The Mandalorian. I still have 2 or 3 episodes to watch in The Mandalorian. I have not finished Picard. I'm only halfway through Picard.
Wow.
And I just haven't finished it.
Spoiler alert, giant flower attacks. Still want to watch it?
Really?
Yeah, there's a giant flower-like thing that attacks.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Interesting.
Do they defeat it by blasting Beastie Boys music at it?
Yeah, there you go. Well, hey, it's Kurtzman and JJ, and they do that, so why not?
That was the actual ending of the last Star Trek movie. Yeah, Beyond. I couldn't even remember it. It's so bad.
And somehow, as dumb as that is, Beyond was better than Into Darkness.
It was the best of the three, and it ended by beating the big bad guy by blasting Beastie Boys music out of the ship's speakers.
And that movie was not only dumb, but boring. But when the best you can say about a movie in a trilogy is it was dumb and boring, when that's the highest praise you're giving to a movie in a trilogy, the trilogy's a fail. But we're not talking about JJ Suckverse. We're talking about these serials. So
did you notice, though, that you picked a serialized movie that actually uses the term mystery box? They're talking about getting Dr. Zorka's mystery box away.
Yeah, I did. But you know what?
It's a literal mystery box.
Yeah, but there's a literal mystery box just because they don't know what's in it, and they eventually answer the question, so it's passable.
All I can do is hear you going, mystery box.
No, that's what JJ was doing. Mystery box? Oh, mystery box. Mystery box. Time to go ruin DC.
JJ would have went all 12 episodes of the original serial without explaining what was in the box.
Or what happened at the end. What happens at the end? What's with the meteorite? What do they do? Mystery. Oh, thanks, JJ. That's super. Anyway, so the Phantom Creeps. Scott, what can you tell us about the Phantom Creeps? Some basic info.
The Phantom Creeps was originally released on January 7th, 1939, distributed by Universal Pictures and produced by Universal Pictures. It aired originally in 12 chapters, running a total of 265 minutes. It starred Bela Lugosi. It was directed by Ford Beebe and Saul Goodkind. Produced by Henry McRae. Screenplay by George Plimpton, Basil Dickey, and Mildred Barish, with a story by Wyllys Cooper. It was re-released in 1949 in a 78-minute heavily truncated version, and that was produced by a different company, not by Universal Pictures, and that was brought back to the big screen in 1949. There's a lot of stock footage in this. The car chase itself is used as later stock footage for other serials. For some reason, we took newsreel shots of the Hindenburg and threw it in here for a little bit.
That's the best part.
Yeah, and bombing of runs or something, yeah.
And the film also included stock footage from The Invisible Ray, which was an earlier serial from Universal Pictures. And yeah, we had a lot of stock war footage. I think at one point the plane is a fighter jet. At another point, it's a Wright Brothers biplane. And at other points, it looks almost like a proto B-52 Flying Fortress. But whatever stock footage we had at the time, you know, these two people, Captain West flew in his suit in a fighter jet somehow without any of the actual, you know, equipment that a fighter pilot would have had at the time. But, you know, hey, you had stock footage, so, you did what you did.
Yeah. That's how it was back then. You took what you could to cut on budget. I mean, if you ever watched the movie Ed Wood by Tim Burton, there's a scene where Ed walks into a movie cinema company and someone calls him over and shows him all the stock footage. And he just starts making up a story from that because that's what he could get his hands on.
Two other things here. The Star Wars opening crawl took it.
We're going to get to that. Okay. But yeah.
From
total,
here.
Totally.
And do we want to talk about Rob Zombie here?
That's later. Okay. That's later. Okay. Yeah, that factors in. Did they tell you how much this cost to make?
There is nothing here about a budget for this. Must have been too far back before they had this information on the budget.
Yeah. Well, and how much it made.
Yeah, you know. None of that is here.
Well, and I don't know if you can really gauge it since it was on before a movie. So that's not wouldn't really be fair, because if someone else came to see if it aired before, like, I don't know, Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, and that's what you came to see, you might not have really given a crap about this move, this serial. You just wanted to see Lon Chaney battle it out with Frankenstein. So that wouldn't have been a good litmus. That's like saying that Trailer X got a lot of hits just because we put it in front of another movie. Well, that's not fair. Everyone came to see the movie, not the trailer. So thank you, Scott. The plot is, wow. So did either of you guys, I sent a link for the 1 hour movie. Did anybody watch all 12 or 11 episodes like I did?
I did not see the link to all episodes. I watched the 78-minute version, and I was actually somewhat horrified and appalled that there's a 265-minute version of this out there, because I thought that the 78-minute version was heavily padded and could have been truncated down to about 40.
Okay. Thomas, did you watch the whole thing?
I watched the link you sent for the whole, you know, one chunk.
Okay. I did not think you guys would watch the whole thing. That's why I didn't send it. And I had all day to kill. So there you go. I watched the whole shebang. It really does help that they give you the text crawls. But basically the story is Bela Lugosi is a rogue scientist named Dr. Zorka. And he creates a bunch of weapons and other items, such as an invisibility belt. He has these little magnetic discs that when he puts it on something, these little spiders go after the discs and blow up and can render a person comatose or possibly dead. A giant robot. Now, well, first of all, before I go on, the discs with the spiders, this is really the case. I have to truly believe that someone brought in a box of spiders and just said, we got to use this. We got to use these. Words came from top. We got to use these. And so they kind of said, okay, well, it'll do this. Is that anybody else's thoughts? Because it's so out of place.
Yeah.
It doesn't make much sense for me, but I don't know what they were trying to do with it.
There's a lot of stuff that was out of place, but yeah.
Right. Maybe it was just go into the prop room and see what you have.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, someone must have done that And they were just like, sure, whatever. Or like someone got told they had to do it. Because it's just weird. It's like, okay, you couldn't have just made it a timed bomb or something.
Nope.
So, I don't know. I mean, and the idea of a timed bomb did exist back then. Even like, if you would just put some explosives with an acid drip pen that would set it off after a certain amount of time, you know, they had those. So it's not like they couldn't have, anyway. So he has that, and he has the giant weird looking robot. And the most important thing of all is a fragment of a deadly meteorite, which he extracts an element which can induce suspended animation an entire army. He calls it his Z-ray. Not X-ray, Z-ray. But the only way you can access this meteorite is using a special chemical vapor, or else it'll make you render you catatonic. So basically, he's going to try to use these to become powerful, maybe a world dictator. And he's trying to get money, possibly selling it to some foreign spies. They don't say from where. This being 1939, I wouldn't be surprised if the implied enemy was Nazi Germany. Wouldn't be surprised if that was the implication. I mean, the war was on pretty much all over Europe and China, and the Eurasian continent in Africa was in the war. So I don't think this was, I think people, it was on their mind. And so you have the U.S. military wanting to get a hold of this in the form of Dr. Fred Mallory, his former colleague, and him wanting to possibly sell it to some foreign agents running a foreign language school as a cover. And most of the movie, you have his Dr. Zorka's assistant, Monk, whom is, if he's not trying to steal the meteorite, he's trying to deliver it somewhere. You have Dr. Mallory and these two government agents, Bob West and Jim, I forget his name, Jim something. They were constantly trying to get it back from the foreign spies. And the whole time, for whatever reason, there's Gene, a news reporter who's trying to get a story, which probably made Scott get annoyed when he was thinking, comparing her to April O'Neil. And what about my story? My story, my story.
April O'Neil is as you rewatch it as an adult, April O'Neil is exasperating in the first couple of seasons of TMNT.
Yeah. Well, and that's what this journalist is like, as annoying as that, because she sneaks onto planes, she follows them around, she sneaks into cars. She's basically following the G-men around to find out what was going on.
Yeah. Well, when she snuck into the plane, I thought it was Bela Lugosi. It was Zorka, right? Who we see sneak into the plane and open up the door and leave the spider. Or no?
Yeah, that was him because he had this invisibility belt.
Right, and then she's there, the devisualizer.
The what?
It's a devisualizer.
Oh, yeah, devisualizer, excuse me.
Yeah. No, I mean, I had a hard time figuring out who she was at first. She just pops up out of nowhere. The first thing Zorka says, I have to change my appearance. And the cut is right to her. And I'm like, does he have something that made him appear like this woman?
Oh, that's good. I thought that was too. I literally thought that. I thought that was the thing. I was like, oh, wow, that's a big change.
Because she just walks out of the forest, and it's like, oh, that was kind of interesting.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who thought that.
No, I thought so, too. And then it goes back to him just trimming his beard. I was like, oh, okay. So without getting into details, it's just, if you look at all the episodes, it's just the meteorite getting passed back and forth between the foreign spies, Dr. Mallory getting kidnapped and forced to figure out how it works, the spies having it, then the G-men grab it, then the spies grab it, then Monk gets it, and back and then Zorka gets it, and he tries to hide his identity as Dr. Zarka, and then he loses it, and it's just a back and forth, back and forth.
He went to Dr. Zane, not Zarka, right?
Oh, Zane, thank you.
I was going to say, Zorka to Zarka is about the worst pseudonym ever.
Dr. Zane, I'm sorry. And finally, it ends with Zorka getting in an airplane. There's a lot of airplane action in this movie for some reason. I think they were just trying to say, wowee, look at us. And it ends with him using the meteorite, which he got from Africa. And wow, that would not hold up today.
Horribly offensive. I got some primitive natives to help me. Or ignorant natives, I'm sorry.
I knew they wouldn't fight me because of their ignorance of these matters. It's like, wow, that's, and oh, they look that, wow. Hey, those two actors, you almost want, when you see the two actors dressed the way they are, you can almost see the guy as a future influence, the guy who wrote Code of Honor and Next Gen going, that's what I need.
Yeah, it was, I watched it, I was cringing. I was like, oh my.
And you said that just to go Code of Honor for Next Gen, they're dressed pretty much like that, Scott, because I haven't seen the episode.
You should watch it just to see how offensive it is. No, they're not quite dressed like that. Think more tribal leadership, but in a more modern spin on what tribal leadership would be.
Okay,
it's more of robes and headdresses.
Oh,
but it's more of a yeah, it's
two steps away from that.
It's two steps away from that, but yeah, it's still offensive. It's still bad. You can see it pulling its influence from that, but it's bad. Somehow the writer read that it's a lizard-like species that has descended from that has Japanese cultural influences into their tribal Africans.
I see. Well, nonetheless, it ends with Zorka using his meteorite concoction to, well, I would say bomb the Hindenburg, cause that explosion, because that's what the stock footage is.
Yeah, but, you don't need a super weapon to take the Hindenburg down. I mean, a match thrown in the right direction might do it.
Yeah.
That's kind of what did do it. It was a spark. It was a spark. I mean, come on.
From that meteorite. Now, why he decided to take it down, I don't know.
Because he was crazy.
Yeah.
This would be like, I mean, using that meteorite weapon to take down a Zeppelin would be like getting a tank to take down your neighbor's fence. It's a little bit of overkill.
Just a little bit.
Well, at that point, I guess he was just mad because he couldn't become dictator of the world or something, which again, there's that overtone because you had dictators at that time trying to take over the world. And so it was, again, one of those very applicable things.
It makes me just the talk of a tank, Mark. We have a mutual friend who shall remain nameless, who I was getting into an argument over where the right to bear arms extended to. And he was trying to argue with me why, if he can afford it and find someone to sell it to him, he should be able to own a functioning tank. And I'm like, no private citizen should be allowed to own a functioning tank.
No, I would disagree. Dr. Zorka, on the other hand, though, he's all right. He can do it.
He would go for two tanks with a nuclear-powered bomb in them, but hey.
Yeah, meteorite-powered bomb and a Z-ray, man.
I want to know what powers his Iron Man. It's a pretty crappy version of the Iron Man suit, but...
And if you notice, it's really good against stopping bullets, except when you fire a bunch of bullets at once at it. Because the only thing that took it down was the machine gun, but rifles didn't do a thing.
That's because Monk hid one of the spider explosives in there, too, though.
Yeah.
No, and I would just think, you know, someone said, Zorka says, how are you going to stop this? And I thought a chainsaw at the rubber articulating arms would neutralize it pretty well.
A hole might do a good job, too.
Yeah.
Or you could just run away from it. It doesn't seem to move very quickly.
Very slowly, it seems.
It might lose a foot race to the walkers in The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Well, and you know what's funny? I love when there's a scene, I don't know if you saw it in the 1 hour one, but where the government agents sneak into his lab to try to find the meteorite, and one, Jim is attacked by the robot.
And it bear hugs him till he goes to sleep.
Yeah. And yeah. he has to like, but they speed it up to make it look more action packed.
Yeah, it's like the old Andre the Giant bear hug in the ring because he couldn't do much else until the wrestler fell asleep.
You know what? They should have got the Ultimate Warrior just to come into the ring, wig out, bounce on the bars, and then kick Andre down and then run away. Which basically that I watched that sidestep. I watched that match this week for some reason. It was over in like 3 minutes.
Which match?
The one Andre the Giant versus Ultimate Warrior, where Ultimate Warrior won and got the belt. He just came, he ran onto the ring, jumped in, wigged out, bounced on the, like pushed down on the ropes a bunch of times, and then kicked Andre down with some like bounce off the ropes, grabbed the belt, wigged out again, ran away. It's like, that was the, unless that was a bridge, that was the worst match I've ever seen.
Side note, at that point in time, like that's after Hulk Hogan fought him in their famous match.
Yeah.
Andre's spine was like fused together. He could barely walk at that point in time. Like, so it was amazing that he could even get to the ring at that point in time. Like, Andre was telling Vince, I've got nothing left. And Vince was like, I got to get one more match out of you. And, it's one of the worst moments of Vince McMahon's life, Andre even wrestling in those last 2 or 3 years of his career. You go look that up, man. Vince was exploiting Andre when he knew it wasn't safe. And then after Andre couldn't physically do anything in the ring anymore, Vince cut him loose.
Well, Vince is a slave master, so that was a small step back into one fall. But anyway, now that we've discussed basically what the plot was, let's get into what we kind of liked about it. And now I dig this sort of stuff, but one of the things I like is the clear influence you can see on subsequent writers. And the most obvious, glaring, smack you in the face one is the text crawl. The text crawl between episodes is basically Star Wars. I don't know if it was it in the 1 hour one.
It wasn't.
Okay. If you just want to check it out, there's the 3 hour one. Before each episode, they would give you, except for the first one, of course, they gave you a text crawl that looked exactly like the Star Wars one. And that wasn't the only one. Flash Gordon did that. Others did that. And it was, you see it. You see that influence. It smacks you in the face and you're like, oh, that's where Lucas got the idea. But it was such a good idea. It was necessary back then because if you went to see a movie and that serial showed up and they didn't tell you what was going on, you were like, huh? What? How come, what's that spider? Why is it blowing up, knocking people out? What's a Z-ray? So that was necessary. And that was a good influence. I also like just the influence it had just on the storytelling, that it would go gonzo, but that inspired future creators, particularly baby boomers, to do the same. And let's be honest with ourselves, the late 70s, 80s, and I guess I can include the 90s to a point, saw some of the most explosive, amazing pop culture that this country's ever seen, that Hollywood's ever produced. I mean, if you just count on your hand, let's just do a quick experiment here. Scott and Thomas, from the 80s and 90s, and I'll even let you include this late 70s, name me major pop culture films that influenced our culture. Just go. I'll give you, in fact, I will do it 30 seconds. I'm literally going to time this. 30 seconds. Just name movies that you think have affected our culture in the terms of language, idiomatic expressions, how we answer things. Just go.
Star Wars.
Independence Day.
Keep going.
Friday the 13th. Nightmare on Elm Street series. Child's Play. Back to the Future. Indiana Jones.
Keep going.
Star Trek.
Uh,
Animal House.
Ooh. Time's up. So those are just right there. You guys had no problem in the first 5 seconds of just barfing out answers. Now let's do an experiment. Remove the Marvel movies, okay? No MCU. Since 2005, films that have done the same thing, go.
Avatar? That's a question mark. It's more TV shows since 2005. It's not movies.
Keep going. Go then. Go.
Oh, TV shows? Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, Sons of Anarchy. Stranger Things.
Yeah, I was
about okay, to say. Okay, so you mentioned TV Netflix. Shows. However, did they... we're past that. Did they impact culture? Did idiomatic expressions come out of it? Did whole people base a stupid, childish philosophy around it? No. No. Walking Dead? Nah, we got bored with that. Game of Thrones? Well, that ran out of steam, and then we found out Benioff and Weiss never knew what they were doing to begin with.
No, when they got past George's material, they didn't know how to finish it. And you know, the thing is, George doesn't know
how to finish it. And nor did they care. Nor did they care to.
I think they cared to. I don't think they want the reviews that they got of their last season. I mean,
they would have
probably couldn't have come up with a worse ending than they did.
Well, you know, a hack can't do anything. They got lucky. But basically, with the exception of maybe Stranger Things, but even that's dubious because it has to leech off of previous material to work. If it wasn't for the nostalgia kick, past season one, it probably would not have the longevity that it has. So my whole point in all of this is that this kind of material that we're watching in this month went on to inspire, not only in and of itself was it creative, but it went on to inspire and influence a whole generation of creators that came to create some of the most modern masterpieces of storytelling. And I know film students are getting mad right now because we're not showing all these bizarre camera angles and everything's not Kubrick-like or whatever the crap they want. But the fact of the matter is, most people want to see Bob Ross, not Andy Warhol and Jackson Pollock. Okay. Jackson Pollock was a man who just took a paint bucket and spilled it out of, splattered it all over the wall and called it art. We really just wanted to see someone paint a mountain.
All right. So what we're going to do here is we're going to take some nice green and we're going to start working on grass here. And we're going to make our field and you fill this in over here just a bit.
Right. But that's what we wanted. That's what your average consumer wants. They want that or something like Mucha or something nice. Not, well, basically what I'm going to do is just drip onto a pallet and say it's a tree because that's what I think it is. And if you don't think it is, whatever.
This has been painting with Sly Stallone. I'm going to punch the canvas.
Right.
How many hits you can take and keep moving forward at your painting.
So, but that's, I'm just saying that it influenced some of the greatest creators we've had. And
I got to be honest, though, I got to back up here because you said people want Bob Ross. And
yeah,
Bob Ross ain't selling these days. That's why the new Star Trek hasn't been like Next Generation that showed you a perfect world. What's selling these days is dark, angry.
Okay, let me back it up then. First of all, Bob Ross is dead. But second, what I mean is, I'm talking about a film school student who wants to make the overly artistic, everything's in shadows and they tell a story through the camera and they do weird things that you and I would look at and go, huh? What?
Yeah.
That's what a film, that's why I said film school student is not going to like this stuff because what they want to do is, I don't know what they want to do. That what they want to do is Jackson Pollock with a camera. That's why it's, Now, you're talking about the average consumer, what I'm saying. But that's an interesting point you bring up, that now it all has to be dark and gritty and psychological and subversive and dark. Just make sure it's dark.
You look at Game of Thrones. Sarah's got us rewatching Sons of Anarchy, which is my first experience to it. You look at The Walking Dead. All of these new TV shows have all been about who can punch you in the gut hardest. And like, I thought Look at the Flowers was one of the, and The Red Wedding was, it couldn't get darker than that. There's stuff in Sons of Anarchy that go right to that. I'm sure there's stuff in Breaking Bad. Right. Black Mirror is always making you feel like you need to take a 6-hour shower after you're done watching it. And this is where TV is these days. We want to just be destroyed mentally in an hour of television.
And here's my point. That doesn't maintain positive longevity.
But it has. Because it's been working since about 2004.
How often do people reference Sons of Anarchy in a regular daily life versus saying, may the force be with you?
But what I'm talking about here is that, well, one, we've got to see where it's at 20 years down the road. But Game of Thrones has got some staying power in the popular lexicon right now. But
they shot themselves in the foot. That's the problem.
You're talking about longevity, though. We're talking about a style of making television that came out of nowhere at the turn of the millennium and has co-opted the entire genre. There's almost nothing anymore aside from sitcoms. It's feel-good television. It's all, how crappy can we make you feel at the end of an hour?
Right. And what I'm saying is, and I'll come up with a much better argument in my mind 5 hours from now, but what I'm saying is, first of all, that is not going to have a lasting impact like Indiana Jones or something. Because if your only memory is, my God, it was just about human atrocity. Okay, you'll remember it. You'll remember it. But will you remember it fondly? Plus, what's the influence? What's next on the influence chart? Darker?
Well, that's the thing. We're racing to the bottom of how dark can we go, and you're always trying to one-up it. That's the problem with the style. But you're talking about a lasting influence. It has to have some staying power because it has monopolized TV and film for going on almost 20 years now.
Well, then let's take it back to film, though. Because film, before I said go ahead and include TV, you were scrambling to think of a film that influenced that much. You could, as soon as I said no MCU, you guys were like, huh.
Yeah, well, film still runs the range. Film is still more diversified to where you still get feel-good films. You still get...
I guess I'm not making my point very clearly, so I'll just drop it and move on.
No, you are making your point very clearly about the cultural impact of some of these films from generations beyond. And while some of these films today, because of the proliferation, might not have as much unique cultural impact, it does have an impact on the medium itself.
But I'm not well, you know what, though? The medium itself, and that's my point, it's not inspiring greater. This, what we watch, Phantom Creeps and stuff like it, inspired greater. And you can't say inspire greater when all you're doing is saying, how dark and human atrocity can we get? Hey, have we had sex eating baby munching yet? Let's do that. That's not clever writing. That's just sick.
It takes a skill to put you in the position of the character and to make you as the viewer feel the emotional pain that the character is feeling. That is one of the highest forms of writing because it makes you identify with the character. It makes you like the character. It puts you're emoting with the character and you're feeling the character's pain almost as if this thing that you know is fictional is real.
I'm really not getting my point across here.
That is really tough to do as a writer.
I'm really not getting my point across here.
I understand your point. I'm just saying I don't know if I agree with your point.
No, I'm not getting it right. I'm just not getting my point across here.
Let's move on.
All I'm trying to say is that there was a positive influence, and now it's just, I want to show how horrible people are, and I want you to come alongside them and empathize with their atrocity, and you're saying that's skillful writing. And maybe it is, but in the long grand scheme, people, you have phases of storytelling in film and TV, and people are going to remember this as atrocity time. And it's just going to, and in the long run, people are eventually going to wear thin on that, because at some point you're going to say, gee, can we stop watching horrible things? I mean, we got tired of like good guys, I guess. But you know what? I really got tired of watching massacres and calling that human and wonderful because it's emotional.
I'm just saying it's easy. It may not be sticking around much longer, but it's easy to dismiss that writing as non-skilled writing when it's not something that you can just, to make the atrocity hit home, you've got to first make the people really like that character.
I didn't say it was unskilled. Okay. Since you brought it up, when done right, which I will contend is not often, it's good. But does it have the cultural impact and longevity of something like Star Wars or Star Trek or superheroes when done well? Things like that. And my answer, you're going to disagree, and I know you are, and that's why we're just going to go back and forth. But my answer is going to be no. And yeah, maybe one day, years from now, I'll eat my words and Scott can come along and say, you are wrong, ha, ha, ha. But I don't see this era, with the exception of, I don't know, I just don't see this era as people going back and saying, man, that was a time when pop culture had it going on. Just much like we are with the 80s and 90s now, I don't see us doing that as much with this era. I see it happening, but I don't see it for the fondness effect, because you can't hold fondly a bunch of bikers going up and doing a racial-based attack. You can't hold that fondly in your heart.
You know, time and distance adds a rosy patina to some of the worst junk. So as you get away from everything, in your mind, it seems to become better than it was when you watched the first time. I'm not sure that I'm going to agree with you that people are going to look back at this time and say that it was not quality, because I think there's a lot of quality writing. Even when we look at Black Mirror, which I think on this show we universally agree is a pretty good episode, pretty good piece of television, Black Mirror is as dark as it gets. It's probably the darkest thing on television.
Well, I'll tell you what, Scott. Let's just say this. You are completely 100% absolutely right about the TV shows until 5 hours now when I come up with an argument that's better than yours, but no one will hear it.
It's not about who's right or wrong. It's just presenting a different opinion. Anyway, let's move on to this episode that we
watched. They call it the golden age of TV, so I will say I'm wrong about that, but I'm telling you, it's not going to have the same impact as like Star Wars or Indiana Jones or whatever. Hey. By the way, those will diminish in time as it is, because those are too nice and we're too busy edifying the Holocaust.
Hey, it's just two different opinions. It's not about who's right or wrong. But let's get back to talking about the Phantom Crimes.
All I'm trying to say is there's influence here, and I don't see how Sons of Anarchy is going to influence other than downward. Because again, like you said, Scott, it's a race to the bottom. What's next? Finding joy in mass killing? I'm sorry. There is no amount of writing you can make that makes me understand a mass shooter. Nope. I am not going to join you on your poor guy. It's okay that he shot up a bunch of people. No, it's not. It's not. I can feel bad for their experience, but once they picked up that gun and decided to go into a church or a shopping mall or a school, nope. Not sympathizing. Nope. Call me stupid and hard-headed, but nope.
No, and look, I'll continue talking about Sons of Anarchy because it's front in my mind. It's not science fiction, but I have said as I'm watching it numerous times that I have to really respect the skill of the writers because I find myself liking these horrible people. They're horrible people. Every single person in that biker gang is a piece of garbage, and they all should be locked up. They do terrible things. None of them are good people. And yet I find myself liking some of them and seeing the human side of them and pulling for them.
I guess that's
strong writing. It really is.
I guess I'm different then.
Well, it's not my favorite brand of TV. I like Firefly. What I liked about Firefly is I felt good at the end of every episode instead of some of these shows where my soul hurts when I'm done. But that's what the style of the last 20 years have been. And this whole discussion started because I kind of went down a rabbit hole of you said people like nice like Bob Ross. But in this last 20 years or so, we haven't liked that. That hasn't been what we've shown with our viewing habits, what we want to watch.
Well, I guess I shouldn't have said anything then. So I guess I should have been way more detailed in my explanation. I guess all I was trying to say is that the film school kids will not like it.
But let's let Thomas in here because he hasn't spoken Thomas, in 20 minutes. Well,
I'm just going to say that in some ways, both of you are correct. The general populace does not look for such things. They are more looking for with the Sons of Anarchy, more of that. But you are also correct that film schools and actually moving the art forwards sometimes requires a different outlook than the popular look. I mean, there are quite a few movies out there that have bombed in the box office, but have been great inspirations for Butterworks or even the entire field of film and TV.
Okay.
So I think both of you have a completely valid point, and it's not one way or the other 100%.
Thomas the mediator. We got to let him speak up earlier in these sidebar conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sickies, if you have never noticed, Rage Master is really bad at face-to-face debate. But if you were to make me text this debate, I'd be 1,000 times better.
We'll see them come through around 8 p.m. tonight.
Yeah.
At 1 o'clock, like our emails about today was.
Yeah, that's about right. And then Scott will send back, that's a good point. I didn't think of that. And then I'll be like, Duff, why do I do that?
I'm just going to maintain what I said earlier. This isn't about either one of us being right or wrong. It's a subjective discussion. And I'm just pointing out a different side of the discussion so that we're not painting with a broad brush and not considering what I can hear our fans screaming at us, even though they're not in the room.
I see.
I
am still going to contend that I don't know how just showing tragic events and human tragedy is as creative as coming up with something like Star Wars or a mythology. Because just having a bunch of biker gangs, I'm not saying it's not skillful writing and making you blah, 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 everything Scott Kennison said. But I'm just saying it's a lot harder to build a world than to take the one you're in and say, let's write about some travesty and try to make the bad have some sympathy for the devil.
There is a reason that I think it is easier in some ways to focus on the dark of human nature because we see that and that's reality. And it's a lot harder to show. It's a lot harder to write a utopia. First off, you don't have conflict in a utopia. You have perfect people. So you've got to figure out a way to break the utopia without breaking it. And you know, this is where it gets tough to do that. But I do think that at some point in the future, if not already, there's going to be discussions in writing school about the impact that shows like Game of Thrones and The Walking Dead had about killing main characters and gut punching the audience and doing a completely different style of television that really hadn't been seen up until that point, combining it with the serial. I can't say that there's not value there. And I can't say that Game of Thrones and Walking Dead and Breaking Bad and these type of shows didn't create and inspire better at some point.
Yeah, but that also has the negative razor of gut punching the audience just become, it's like jump scares in a horror movie.
Yeah, everything becomes overused at some point.
Hang on, because a jump scare serves a purpose sometimes, but now it's just so cliche that every horror movie is nothing but a series of jump scares. And if you're off, your view is emotionally gut punching the audience is good, then it just turns into Rian Johnson writing, and that's not good.
It's
because
like now
we're just going, what's the best way I could piss off the audience?
It's like being a chef. You got to use the right amount of seasoning. And just because paprika is good, it doesn't mean you throw in the whole container of paprika into the dish. You got to use the right amount.
And that's the problem with this kind of writing is it has a very limited shelf life, because how many times are you going to gut punch till someone just wakes up and says, I'm done. Look at Walking Dead. Eventually, you realize it's just them waking up going, what kind of human atrocity have we not covered today?
The last episode I watched was when Negan kills Glenn, and it wasn't because he killed Glenn. It was the moment where he had Rick having to cut off Carl's hand or die. So, yeah. And I, at that point, I was like, I'm out. I've been defeated. You've succeeded. You have put me in the position of Rick to where you have mentally broken me, and I don't want to go on anymore. And I've been out. I've never come back to the show.
And that's why it doesn't have like the longevity. Whereas I respect the guys getting back to the Phantom Creeps. I respect what they want to do because they wanted to build something and do something interesting, because it seems to me it's a lot easier to write a movie or a show of just reality gut punches than it is to say, I'm going to make up a story as balls weird as it is about a guy who has an invisibility belt and a meteor that does this. And then someone else can come along and say, wow, that was weird, but I think I can improve upon it. You can't really improve upon Walking Dead, because the only way to do is go downward into a very depraved, sick, disturbing thing, like you said, Scott. And that's why I'm taking my position. That's what I mean by influence.
Okay.
If someone like Sons of Anarchy, knock yourselves out. But, and for all I know, I've seen a couple episodes, and I think it's an interesting show. I really do. It's not necessarily my take, but it's there. And Walking Dead, I didn't watch because I got bored with it after a little bit.
And, you know, don't take this the wrong way, but I think I probably used the wrong shows in the argument, because I know that you don't watch these shows, and it's hard for you to see the value in shows that you don't watch or like. So I think in some ways you're dismissing the influence those shows have, because it's not an influence that you like in our entertainment.
Yeah, but no, it's also because I don't, like I said, with this, with serials and all, I don't see the creative side of humanity in that. I see the let's just do something depraved side. And in my mind, that's, unless it can do what you said it does with, I can understand that person, that's just too easy.
Yeah, but I think you're dismissing.
It's way too easy to say, I could write a story about a biker gang doing a drive-by shooting for drugs.
Anyone can do that, but that's not what you're oversimplifying with way too broad a brush what that show is.
I know they have family drama, yada yada yada.
Oversimplifying.
It's like watching an episode of Cops.
Walking Dead is oversimplified. People oversimplify Walking Dead when it's about the worst human atrocities. Game of Thrones gets oversimplified. There's a lot of layers to that.
You know why I do the Walking Dead that way? Because I read the comic where the beginning was just like, here I'm talking about the human element and how we break down an uncivilized society. Oh, gee, no one's ever done that before.
I thought I heard Thomas trying to chime in again.
No. No.
Okay. Thomas is just staying clear.
Yeah, I'm like, I think we're going over the same ground again, but okay.
Yeah, we are.
We are. So let's get, things I like about the Phantom Creeps.
We're still on Cheers, so. I got some more, but if you guys go ahead.
I like the effects with the invisibility belt.
That was kind of neat.
I thought that when they weren't resorting to stock footage for the time, they did a good job with, you know, there were some cross wipes and fades that I thought was pretty good. I really enjoy the old time orchestra music. And even though that was reused from Bride of Frankenstein, I think, or Frankenstein's Monster, I really liked that old timey overdramatic music for all the scenes and the cues that were coming from the score.
That was standard back then.
I even think I found a fondness for the overdramatic acting and stage reading that was going on, because you could tell that this was back in the time where a lot of these actors still were classically trained as stage actors, which is very, very different from film acting.
Definitely.
Especially with like Monk and Dr. Zorka, there I saw a lot of like, it was a lot of stage acting technique, I think, in there with the way they were addressing the audience and the camera and delivering their lines. But I kind of found a fondness for it after I adjusted to it.
Yeah, I you know, I liked some of the effects too, in that some of them were just flat out real. Like they dropped, like there was a scene where the spies are chasing. The government men have the meteorite, and the foreign spies, that's, and I call them that, Sickies, just because that's what they keep calling them. They don't call them anything else but the foreign spies.
From the International School of Languages.
I know, right? So, the other. And they're chasing the government guys, Jim and the other one.
The G-Men. The G-Men.
The G-Men, right. But they're chasing them to get the meteorite. And a train, and they're paralleled with a train, and they try to cut across it, and one of the cars gets hit. And it looks great, actually. When I saw it happen, I was like, oh, bad. And I'm pretty sure that was real, which means, too, somebody had to figure out how to make that work. And I remember in the early days of stunt acting, a lot of these guys were doing the action. There were no safety harnesses like there are today. It was drive that car and make sure that that the tail end is what's hit and get out.
True. Very true.
So safety standards were, here's a pair of gloves just to keep your hands safe from glass. That was a safety standard.
Pretty much.
So, I liked that. I liked that effect, but that was the case. Plus, I'm sorry, go on.
I was going to say, the story wasn't a bad story.
No.
It made sense. It kind of moved along in a flow. I mean, obviously, sometimes you're sitting there going, I don't understand why this is going on and what's happening. I mean, some planning on the bad guy's side was pretty bad, but it wasn't a terrible story, and sometimes it made sense. And I said sometimes, because sometimes you just go, this guy is winging it and making no sense at all, and how on earth does he know the spies are that, all that stuff, but...
Yeah. Well, and sometimes I wonder if the writing wasn't made because they had stock footage and they wanted or had to use it. So... Like the one with the, again, I don't know if this was in the hour long version, but there was a fire station. There was some stock footage of firemen putting out a fire, and that happened to be the lab that caught on fire that Zorka had. And I don't know if that got added because they wanted to use the footage or what.
I don't remember that part.
All right, that might have been in the long version.
Yeah,
there's a lot longer things in the. It's a lot more detailed, and as Scott pointed out, it could use some compression.
Okay. Oh well, yes, for sure. I mean, it's an older film. We can't say it's, you know, brand new or anything. So you can't.
Yeah.
You have to give it some slack.
Yeah, well, and this was the new, this is when they were first experimenting with this kind of storytelling. So it was a whole new world. It was the Wild West. So doing goofy things sometimes were going to happen. And that was the nature of the beast. But as I said, that kind of innovative spirit is what would lead to greater innovations down the line.
There's always there's always a risk when you're going to take a 265 minute piece of entertainment and truncate it down to 76 minutes. I mean, you're cutting out two-thirds of the production. It's you're going to get some disjointed parts in the story. It's going to be, I mean, that's probably, as much as I say it could have been more compressed, it probably was too compressed, and that's why some things didn't seem to make sense to me at times.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I remember seeing the hour or so one back however many years ago, but I decided to stick it out and watch the whole thing. So, anything else we want to praise?
I'll take that as a no.
Okay, me too. I'll just finish with this fun fact. The robot is now owned by Rob Zombie, and he uses it in stage shows, to my knowledge. Now, I've seen Rob Zombie twice, and unfortunately, he didn't bring it out on stage. So maybe I saw him before he owned it, or I don't know, but... And he also made a cartoon using it. So just a little fun fact about that.
It's a really cool looking robot.
I don't know where they got the design for it. Is it a stretch for me to say that there is that it influenced like C-3PO, or is that more Metropolis?
I feel like if anything, it would have influenced the Lost in Space robot, because if you take the arms and put hooks on the hands.
Okay. There's probably a point to that.
I'm trying to think of how the Cybermen in Doctor Who look, if there could be influence from that to the Cybermen of the original version of them, but
I don't know.
Let me search this one out.
Yeah, go ahead. With that, let's get on to Jeers. And for me, one of them is, and maybe it's just because I sat through the whole thing, it drags. And slow doesn't mean bad. You can have a slow movie that's very good. 2012 or 2001, for example. But in this case, it was slow, because then there's just parts where Dr. Zorka is just putzing around, driving around after his wife dies in a plane crash. So, and he's putzing around because he needs to be where the plane crashes, I guess.
Yeah, I will agree that the pacing, even in the 76-minute version, is bad. And I've got to think that in the 265-minute version, it's even worse. But
I would hope so.
It takes there's a lot of fill, which, to be fair, I don't know how much of that was intentional or they had to fill the time, so this is what they did. I don't know.
Plane crashes don't work that way.
Yeah.
You don't walk away from a plane crash.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That is the nicest plane crash ever. It's like a rough landing. That thing fell straight out of the sky. And then they're just...
Next Mrs. It, Zorka? Like nothing.
Well, and it tumbles, too. Like, the plane tumbles, and they're just like, ow.
Yeah, they're walking around in there as the plane's spiraling out of control. It's like they have inertia dampeners in that plane.
And the only reason the pilot is out is because he was knocked unconscious by the bomb. It's like, okay, so I guess that's not bad.
Yeah.
Monk's line at the end, I won't die, I'll surrender first. Coward.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When he's not trying to backstab Zorka, he's just giving up. You know, there's a...
The entire time he's going, I don't want to go back to Alcatraz. I mean, he's a... Your assistant is a criminal. I mean, come on.
How many times is Zorka going to let him betray him over and over and over again?
Right.
Oh, you almost tried to kill me, but you won't this time.
What's I'll funny give you another chance. The way he gives him the chance, like he opens it up. This is the meteor after some exposition. Okay. If you don't use this chemical, it'll blow up or it'll make render you catatonic. So make sure you use this chemical. Now, I trust you not to do anything wrong. And then the whole how he controls the robot, but then he takes the control off and puts it down. So is there a code on that or something? Is it tied to your genes? I mean, is there some way to prevent him from just picking it up and using it against you?
And we find out, no.
No.
Runs off with the invisibility belt, and then... Zorka is so unprepared with security when he moves his office in right next door to the International School of Languages.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was a terrible idea.
Well, Zorka is a case of a smart, dumb person.
He's like Brain from Pinky and the Brain. He has these elaborate plans and aren't fully thought through.
Yeah. But Monk isn't as entertaining as Pinky. No.
What are we going to do tonight, Zorka? Same thing we do every night, Monk. Try to take over the world. I'll say this. The initial feud between the other doctor, who I can't remember his name,
Mallory,
his wife, and Zorka, I'm not buying it. You're not going to tell her about the element, are you? Yes, I'm going to tell her about the element. I have no choice but to turn you over to the government to make sure our government protects it so that no other government that would misuse it would get it. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Make sure it's in our hands.
I think that's that stage that they're writing from stage to cinema without thinking about it. Because at the same time, Zorka shows his wife the spider catatonic bomb. And then out of nowhere, Mallory shows up and he's like, you're right there. He clearly is right there. You could have just turned your head. You could have turned your head 90 degrees to the left and seen him. He was literally making no effort to hide.
He really does fit the trope of the just dumb supervillain who needs to explain his plot to everybody so that it can be foiled.
Well, and that used to be a piece of exposition, but now it's like, well, I mean, it's good, but I don't know. But just that scene right there tells me, as you said, Scott, this is clearly a stage technique, because in a theater production, you would have Dr. Mallory fake hiding off to the side for the whole audience to see, because you have to do that.
But it's a soliloquy.
Yeah. Whereas here, they kind of forget that, you know, you could just move the camera and make it look like he's hiding.
And they did semi-advance things with the camera. For 1939.
They did, but they were still learning, and it comes out that way. How about the fact that they, amongst the stock footage, now I don't know if this is a pro or a con, but they showed the Hindenburg disaster. Is that a pro or a con?
It
probably depends on how woke you are. No, I don't know. I just don't know both.
I'm not sure. On one hand, it's like, burn, baby. Wait a minute. That sounds terrible.
Oh, the humanity. It's like,
yeah,
you didn't have too much stock footage back then.
That's true. That, and again, I think a lot of people would have been like, well, it's a Nazi thing. Who cares?
I'm pretty sure they got some stock footage from World War One of battleships being bombed.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
They went back to that one quite a few times.
I think that might have been looked kind of like a test firing, like a range.
Yeah, okay.
I also love the precision that Dr. Lorca has of throwing his discs out of the airplane and hitting the targets below.
Yeah.
Perfectly. Well, they're magnetically tracked to his target, I guess.
What was the plan to get Zorka out of the sky? Because you can't shoot him down because he's got enough explosive power in there to blow you all up. What was the plan? Drive by and shoot him with your sidearm from close range like the Red Baron in World War One?
Hey, you, get down there. Stop.
I mean,
that really was
what I read, that in some like early World War One combat, they actually went up there and were shooting at each other with their pistols.
Yes.
Because they couldn't mount guns on the planes.
Yeah, until Fokker found out the method, yeah.
Yeah, because you would shoot your own propeller off. They had to get a interrupter, yeah, and time it, a timing belt.
Right.
Yeah, but until then, it was just pistols and, you know, little submachine guns, and that was it, really. And then basically trying to smash into each other. It's like, wow.
Yeah, that's why I wish they would have used lances and tried to joust.
Plain jousting. I love it.
Hey, we're the new knights of knights of this era. Let's just make a really long pole, and I need you to charge at this guy. And then you get that idiot that would put the pole in front of him and ruin his propeller.
You know, I think it just would have been funny if you had a treaty that was signed that said, yes, all aerial combat will be completed with lances. And then you just sent your whole army up there with a gun. And at the last second, you tossed your lance aside and just shot him. Well, you're supposed to use a lance.
You violated the Knights Treaty.
Whoops.
Oh, I think that would have happened in World War II. Hitler would have done that one. Just been like, and over. And I win World War II. No one else has a gun on their plane.
No. You see, they dropped their lances by accident. It was really windy.
Ah.
Oh, that's another jeer. Did you notice that the cops, I don't know if it's cheer or jeer, the cops that storm Zorka's lab have bayonets attached to their rifles?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I noticed that. They were also dressed in the standard issue World War One outfit. I was like, whoa.
The cops are getting old World War One surplus.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Call it the National Guard. It was like, okay.
Right. That was before then. I was expecting to start using stock footage from King Kong, but since they already... Oh, wait, that was RKO. They couldn't have done that. Because they ripped off the Invisible Ray, which was also a Universal picture, but it was starring Boris Karloff instead. But the scenes where he's getting the meteor, that was all ripped off from another movie.
Yep.
Which is like, wow, you're ripping off your own studio.
Could you imagine if somebody did this today and you were just like, you're making like a space opera, and in certain scenes you just cut like an X-Wing dogfight from A New Hope in there. And in another scene, it's the USS Enterprise docking somewhere. In another scene, it's the Jupiter 2.
Well... That had, you know what? There has to be something like that somewhere, like another country that did that.
I mean, like I'll be honest, Next Generation, Star Trek reused, there are certain clips that I see reused from the TOS movies. There are scenes in Next Generation that were used all the way through the end of Voyager that they just cut them in different ways. And I'm like, yeah, that's like the ninth reuse of that scene. But... You know, they did it for budgetary reasons. You just don't do it as much and obvious today from what you do within your own franchise. They're just lifting from other movies. Like, that's not even the same actor.
Well, and you know what? I mean, let's see. Copyright. Well, first of all, there was the same studio, so they can do that. But I think, too, remember, this is not like everybody went out and saw movies all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You could lift from the Invisible Ray and just bank on the fact that most people didn't see that movie anyway.
Right. And even if somebody thought they did, it's not like they had Google to go check it.
Right. Correct. And they won't get to broadcast it. So whereas now, holy crap, the moment that got aired, it would have been put out in the Twitterati verse in 5 seconds.
Yep. I hold the sum of human knowledge in my hand, and its most common uses are cat videos and nitpicking entertainment. And a third one that the Lunatic Parade would bring up.
Very true. The internet has definitely had its uses, and unfortunately, most of them have not been super productive for the human race.
Nope. But I digress. We got anything more we want to say about this?
I don't think so. I think we're ready to rate it. What about you?
I'm there. Who wants to start?
Okay. Let's say how many, what's the rating system?
Z rays? Devisualizer belts?
Z rays.
Okay.
Okay. This is tricky because part of me thinks this is a really good film because it does have its benefits and it was ambitious for its time and all. But being it's from this longer series and it's cut down, it loses quite a bit probably. I'm going to give it 6.5. I mean, it is ambitious, it's good, and for its time period, it does a pretty good job. So I can't bash it too much. I can't say it's the worst thing ever. I mean, it doesn't hold quite up to, you know, what you can do now, but again, this was made back when, so you can't compare it 100%. So I think 6.5 for me.
I'm going to go with a 5 death rays. It's got a plot. It follows that plot. It's plot driven. But I can't go much higher than a 5 because they're very shallow characters. You know, there's not much depth to anything that's going on here motivation wise. And I don't think there's too much depth to the discussion of anything that's being there. It's a decent, by the numbers plot that can keep you tuned in. It's fun. It took some chances on some things, but I don't think it stands out as anything in my mind as being something that is above the average quality for the time or for the genre.
Okay. I will give this a 6. I miss Thomas. What did you give this?
6.5.
Okay. Yeah, I give it about a 6. I like the influence. I like the innovation. I'm a big fan of Bela Lugosi. And it's really neat looking, some of the effects, but it does drag a little bit. It gets goofy. And it's an early era serial. Would it have kept me coming back for more? Yes. But I think that if it had been attached to a really bad movie, I might not have gone. Let's put it that way. So, I think a 6. I would watch it again, but I would watch the shorter version now that I've seen the whole thing. That makes sense to me, I guess.
Okay.
Yep. So I'm trying to figure out here. I sent a list of what we were going to have, what we were going to watch next, and I can't find it. Hang on. I'm looking.
Or we can just say, tune in next week to find out.
That is a fantastic idea. Thank you, sir.
Yes,
sir. Tune in next week for the next episode of The Sci-Fi Melody.
Leave us comments at our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com or go back through previous episodes to get the defunct list of places that we used to be. yeah, that's it. Ravinglunaticmedia.com, ravinglunaticmedia.com, ravinglunaticmedia.com. What's left for them to do, Rage Master?
Stay sick, sickies!